Welcome to the GBC Big Three Podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and joining me for the first time in 4 weeks as co-host, reunited again, is none other than Jessica Baker. Jess, welcome, my dear friend.
Matt, I've missed you so much.
They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. It's true.
The listeners at home are like, oh gosh, not these two again.
They're back together.
I'm loving it.
Get ready for the high-pitched screams. So what's going on? What have you been, what docos have you been watching on Netflix lately?
Oh, well, funny you should ask, Matt. I've actually just smashed out David Attenborough's, his like witness statement of the planet imploding around us. And so now I'm a full plant-based diet and I'm purchasing a beehive and for Christmas I'm getting a compost.
I do feel like Netflix is changing your life one documentary at a time.
It is. I feel like I'm a better person because of it.
Really?
Yep. I've got no social media still, 5 weeks going strong.
Wow.
And now I'm eating vegetables.
Can I say, as someone who, you know, needs to contact you on the reg, you not having social media may have a positive experience in your life. It's really negatively impacting mine.
Yeah, so look, it was okay unfortunate when didn't get the term plan for youth and the day before youth you messaged and said, hey, remember you're on the tour. I did not remember.
Can I say you smashed out an awesome message?
Yeah, I can write a sermon in a day. Mark Rader, watch out. I'm pretty amazing. So, yeah, that was stressful. Otherwise, no social media is great.
Yeah, so that's impacted me. And now I feel like now that you're a plant-based diet kind of person, that's going to impact me as well. Like,
you poor thing.
It was only a couple of weeks ago we had a delightful barbecue and the meat was delicious.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I still love meat. But I love the planet more. Imagine if I became a vegan, you'd never hear the end of it.
I just want to talk to you again. That's not true. If there are any vegans out there, I love you.
Yeah, we love you. Well done for saving the planet.
Okay. Let's move on before we offend anyone. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during our online services this past Sunday. And Jess and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who might have missed it, Mark spoke about growing in our relationship with Jesus as part of our current series on evangelism called Plan A. You can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Jess, I'm interested. What are your thoughts coming out of Rader's message?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this sermon series. It's something I've been thinking about for a while and something that kind of plays on my mind in that, like, I probably don't talk about Jesus enough and I probably don't evangelize enough. And why is that? Why can't I, you know, do that? It's something I've been talking about with my husband a lot. And we kind of came to the conclusion of, if you're not talking to Jesus or you're not learning, there's nothing for you to talk about.
Yeah.
And so that kind of call to, you know, you need to get amongst it.
Yeah.
And then it kind of flows naturally. I've just started reading lots of Christian books and stuff because I've got a lot of time on my hands without Instagram.
Yeah.
And so like reading these things, like you want to talk about it and you want to talk about what you've learned. So something just that simple as picking up a Christian book has made a big difference.
And opening
already.
Up that space for God to speak into that.
Yeah, for sure. What about you?
I love you. I love it. I love you. Wow. What a declaration.
That great banter you all wanted.
How do you come back from that?
You can't. We're both happily married. I'm just putting that out there.
It's a platonic sibling love.
What did you take away from this sermon?
All my days. What did I take? What am I thinking these days? No, I am loving it. I think what stood out for me out of Rader's message was, I think so often we can use our relationship. We're not going to be able to come back from that. We use our relationship with Jesus and where we're at in that to almost tap out of evangelism, I think. Well, yeah. I say we, I mean me. Like, I'm aware that if I'm not in a good place with my relationship with Jesus, if I don't feel like I'm hitting the benchmarks and hitting those kind of KPIs, so to speak, then that just means that evangelism isn't for me. Mm. But I loved what Rader said, particularly talking about the call, Jesus' call of those first disciples, about how actually like their qualifications weren't a part of the process. It was their willingness to follow. And I think as long as we're, and like you said, as long as we're seeking out those opportunities, sorry, I just relived the I love you moment. As long as we're still seeking out those opportunities to grow in Christ, even if we're not hitting all those benchmarks, God can use that. And like, and I think, you know, it makes absolute sense that our relationship with Jesus is the first step towards us living out the Great Commission.
Yeah.
So, sure. Yeah, I was a huge fan. All right. Now that we've just brought it all in, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So, Jess, what are the questions that we're going to be hitting Rader with today?
Question one is, why do you think it's so common for believers to separate evangelism and discipleship when in truth they're two sides of the same coin? How do we go about reconnecting these two practices?
Mm. I think, yeah, like obviously that's a huge question. There's so much in that.
Yeah.
But again, I think because so often we can differentiate the two, we hold them at, you know, to different standards. And yeah, I'm interested to see what Rader says about that.
Yeah. Question two is, how do we let go of the idea that we need to grow in Jesus before we can follow him?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about before. Yeah, sure. Love that.
And question three, how do we go about discerning what Jesus might be saying to us?
Hmm. This is a question that
comes up a lot.
Constantly coming up. And I think there's clearly just such a doubt in people that, you know, am I hearing what I think I'm hearing? Is it from God? Is it not?
Yeah.
Like, should I be acting on this? Should I not? And there's a lot of apprehension to kind of step out in that. Mm. So it keeps coming up. I guess we're just going to keep trying to tackle it until we feel confident that what we're hearing is from God and that we can move forward in that.
I think it's like that new parent thing, right? We want a manual to tell us exactly how to raise kids.
Mm.
And we're just not going to get it. So if you want like a black and white answer, like I always do, like it's not going to happen.
Not today.
Yeah.
Not today. All right. Well, great questions. Keen to get into them. There's only one thing missing, and that is Mark Rader himself. So Rader, welcome to the big three.
Thanks, Matt.
I love you too. Just want to make sure
so I don't feel left out.
You don't feel left out.
That's good.
You know, you hold a special place in my heart. In fact, speaking of, you've been on leave for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just spent that time in the corner rocking back and forth, whispering your name. How was it? You celebrated a big O birthday?
I did. Yep. I turned 50 over the holidays.
Don't look a day over 49.
I know, eh? I don't feel a day. No, I won't even tell you.
Yeah.
Yes, that was nice. It was good to be able to celebrate with family and a few friends. And we had a 21st as well. And about 6 weeks before that, we had an 18th. So we were kind of in the middle of a whole bunch of kind of celebration. Jeez, so it's kind of a bit of a weird kind of patch.
Several loans this year.
Well, COVID's been helpful, you know, like parties of 20 or fewer is kind of manageable. So, you know, it was, and
lucky there.
Yeah. Well, and to some degree, I think having 20 people is like, it's actually quite nice.
Mm.
It's enough people to feel like a crowd really, but it's not so many people that you can't make sure you're touching base with everybody who's there. And so like I found both the COVID parties that we had for the girls, I thought they just had a great vibe to them. Mm. So I was like, yeah, this is okay.
I'm picking up that you're slightly an introvert though. So I think a 20 person party is your vibe.
Is more your jam.
No, not even that. Fewer than 20 is my jam.
But a party of one would be great.
I liked watching the girls have parties of 20 and then retreating to my bedroom every so often to kind of
deep breaths.
Re-engage.
Yeah, that's not really my vibe. The more the merrier. Yeah.
Jess is really struggling in COVID.
Yeah.
Hence why she's completely changed her life based on Netflix documentaries. Change needs to happen. Well, that's not what we're here to discuss. So let's get into the big three. So Rader, during your message, you spoke about how there's this, I guess, what you would consider a common misconception where we can separate evangelism and discipleship, but you actually spoke about how they're a part of the same spectrum. And so I think that really resonated with people and we want to kind of unpack that a little bit. Why do you think it's common for believers to separate evangelism and discipleship when in truth, as you see them, they're two sides of the same coin, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I think the basic reason is that a lot of our discipleship has become internalized and private. And evangelism, almost by definition, even if it's kind of low level, just talking about Jesus with my friends, saying I've gone to church on the weekend, is public, right, and external. And I think that that kind of wedges open the divide between the two, because a lot of what we do from our discipleship is private. It's kind of an individual thing. It's internal. I don't need to talk about that in lots of ways. But if I'm going to talk about Jesus, I kind of have to do that publicly.
Yeah.
I can't just kind of, you know, do telepathy to, you know, kind of just think good Jesus thoughts at somebody and hope that they become a Christian. You know, and so there's, I think that's probably one of the big reasons. I think a second reason is that a lot of the emphasis on evangelism has been, I think, on the outcome, right? Whether that be I had a great conversation with someone, so that kind of ticks the evangelism box, or someone I know came to faith. And so it feels like it's a long way from just talking about Jesus with somebody, you know. So when Belinda, who's plan A material we're kind of basing the series on, was talking about, I think it's when she talks about sowing, you know, sowing seed, it's just about kind of talking about Jesus. And the example that she gave when I interviewed her was just one of her neighbors was, they were chatting and her neighbor asked, what do you do on the weekend? And she says, oh, you know, I'm involved in church. And her neighbor just kind of pretended she didn't say anything like that at all. She goes, that's sowing seed. And I think because of the emphasis on seeing people come to faith and, you know, or having those really significant faith-based conversations with people, that feels like way too far for us, right? And so a lot of the techniques and tips and tools that people have been trained in are often focused on getting people over the line.
Yeah.
And that feels like a long, long, long way away. And so it's almost like we kind of go, ah, listen, that, like, for lots of reasons. One, I might feel like there's no way I could ever get to that point with my friend Matt, because I don't think I've got the skills to do that technique or tool. Or I'm like, my friend Matt is so far from faith, so far from that at all. Like, if I could mention I go to church and doesn't mock me out, that would be like as good as if he came to Jesus, you know? And so I think we tend to just kind of separate evangelism in terms of its outcome. And because it's external and a lot of our discipleship is internal, which I think is a problem, we divide the two.
It's got me thinking about, and we've talked about this from a ministry perspective, how, you know, sometimes on your list of to-dos you put projects, and the project, like, it's just like, you know, it might be launch this or whatever it might be, and that just feels so big, so much so that each time you see it on your list, you never touch it because it's like, well, I don't have the time to even fathom what that is. And that an important step is to actually go, well, here are the, you know, 10 or so things that I need to do before I can even start to consider doing the big project.
Yeah, it's the insight from David Allen in his book, How to Get Things Done, which ironically I still haven't finished, which I think, so that's kind of an interesting irony. But like, he makes the point, you can't do a project.
Yeah.
You can only do the next step. And I think you're right. Mm. If we say that if my aim is to see my good friend Matt come to faith, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But if we break it down, and I think sometimes we don't know then how to break that project down. We might desperately want, you know, my friend Jess or my brother-in-law or whoever it is to come to faith. And we go, that's the goal, but like, I don't know how to get there from here, you know? And so what do I do first?
Yeah.
You know, and again, we tend to think in big blocks, like, well, I invite them to church. That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way, you know, whatever it might be. And and so I think to have smaller steps, as you say, I think is really helpful to kind of go, oh, actually, yeah, I can do that. Yeah. I could mention the fact that I was at church on the weekend, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah, which is ultimately what plan A is, isn't it? And step one is, hey, where are you at with Jesus before you even start to consider how you might share Jesus with others?
Can you just explain, I think, like, evangelism and discipleship, very big Christian buzzwords, when you kind of told me to, like, put them on the same spectrum, I kind of get a bit confused between the two. In your sermon, you talked about evangelism being just talking about Jesus. But then what is discipleship and how do they kind of work together?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jess. I mean, I'm not even sure if spectrum is the right terminology, because that still suggests that discipleship is on one end and evangelism is on the other. So I don't think that's the right language. I don't know whether it's they're two sides of the same coin or something, because I think and this is why I chose the Mark chapter 1 passage, because Jesus calls his disciples in the context of his mission to change the world, and the call to follow him is followed by, and I will teach you to participate in the mission, right? To fish for people. And so there's this sense that Jesus' call to follow him and to learn is not just to follow him and learn about him or about ourselves, but to follow him and learn about the kingdom and about his role in it, about our role within it and our place within it. And I think we've separated those two. Mm-hmm. Come, follow me, and that's enough. And then eventually, if you become a good enough follower or whatever it is, then you can be taught to fish for people. Mm. And Jesus kind of says, it's kind of like it's the same thing. To follow him is to learn about evangelism to some degree. Mm. You know, and so our discipleship is evangelism.
Yeah.
And they have to go together. Like, it might be better if we came up with a third term, you know.
Do you have a third term yet? I'm ready.
I don't know, discipleism or something. something where you just kind of go, following Jesus cannot be separated from the mission. Because that's the model that Jesus gave, right? Yeah. Even the 3 years he spent with his disciples was not just so they could get to know him and strengthen their relationship with him. It had nothing to do with that. It had everything to do with the fact that I'm leaving in 3 years and I'm going to leave it with you. So let's see how far we can get before that happens. And, you know, and so there's this sense that they were always called, right? And you know, the disciples, the great story is that if you can't see yourself in the lives of the disciples, you're missing something. Yeah, I mean, they
set a pretty low bar.
They set the bar just like we set the bar. Yeah. They stumbled towards truth. They sometimes got it right and sometimes got it wrong. Sometimes they got part of something right, but not the whole thing. Mm. They had doubts and fears and uncertainties and the whole thing. Mm. And yet Jesus used them. And I think that's the piece for us. So I don't know. I don't know how we bring them together. I think that, which is the heart of your question. Mm. All I know is that all I know is we need to.
Yeah.
We need to, because if we continue to treat evangelism as something extra, as Belinda said, disciples make disciples. And that's true in, the Great Commission and whatnot. Mm. We see that played out time and time again. So we have to find a way to hold them together. And some of it, I think, is to make our discipleship more public, right? So that we're not just having a private relationship with Jesus, an internal relationship with Jesus, but our discipleship is lived out in public, so that our evangelism, which is linked, which is out loud and public, would kind of match up a little bit. Because I think that's one of the distinctions, right? My inner life is separated from my external life, my private from my public, not in the sense of being a hypocrite or lacking integrity, but there's kind of the internal private devotions and there's the external work of evangelism, quote unquote. Yep. And we've got to bring those together. So if our discipleship is, particularly as we focus on life groups now, a little bit more than we have perhaps, where we have an opportunity to be living out our discipleship just a little more publicly, finding ways to talk not about our faith with someone who's not a believer, but talk to other believers about our faith, that I think will help us bring those two things together.
Which makes complete sense, because I don't know why we would ever think that by keeping our personal relationship with Jesus private, that in any way helps and enables us to then share Jesus with people who don't know Jesus. Mm. Like, the easiest one you would assume to do is to talk with other believers about your shared belief in Jesus, because these are people where, this is common ground, and it's, I love that passage. I love that message. I love how Jesus works in that way. Like, yes, I'm being challenged in this way. I'm hearing God in that way. And there's this there's this camaraderie and community, which is obviously what the church is. If we can't do it here in our safe space, how do we expect to then go out into the world where there might be some pushback, there might be some resistance, some even hostility, and speak about, hey, this is what I'm learning about Jesus this week?
Yeah. Well, and reminding ourselves continually that, you know, we've been sent to do the same work that Jesus has been sent. I mean, that gives you reason to talk to people. Yep. Right? Like, you know, if I could guarantee that this week you would have five opportunities to speak to someone who doesn't know Jesus and they're going to ask you some hard questions about suffering, I'd like to think that you'd take that seriously and get prepared. Right? The problem is we can't guarantee what's going to happen this week and you know, in our families or our friends, our networks, our workplaces, whatever that might be. But there's a sense that we have to remember that the whole point of following Jesus is to participate in the life of the kingdom and to see the restoration and renewal of all things. And that requires teamwork, and that requires all of us to, you know, like, what's working for you? And I'm struggling with this and I'm finding that hard and I've got a doubt in this space and like, what do I do with that? And I'm fearful or I'm anxious, like whatever it is, and be sharing with one another, not just because it helps us feel better personally, but because it helps us achieve the goal. You know, you think about, you know, elite level teams, whether they be corporate teams or athletic teams. I mean, they know what they're after. You know, we want certain profit at, after quarter one, or we want to win a championship or whatever it is. And they are constantly talking and with one another and with the coaches and to improve so that they can actually achieve those things. We've kind of removed all of that. We've kind of become a bit of a gym rather than a sports team. You know, a gym, you go when it's convenient for you and you do what's helpful for you. But you're not trying to achieve a corporate goal.
Yeah.
Whereas like athletes, they go to the gym and they're kind of after their own fitness. But the only reason they're after their own fitness is because if I'm not fit, I'm going to let the side down.
Yeah.
You know, and so that idea of a shared purpose, that transforms some of our private disciplines.
Yeah.
Because now all of a sudden, my discipleship is important for you. Because if I'm not growing, then I'm, you know, got to be aware of grace and the Holy Spirit. Then, but then, you know, I'm letting the side down. If we are about the work of the kingdom, and it takes a we, and I'm not taking my part in that seriously, well, so like that kind of corporate striving together and reminding each other and saying, hey, no, it's hard, let's press on, or no, you don't want to work out today, you don't want to do this thing today, let's do it together. You know, all those sorts of things, I think, become really significant kind of models and motifs for our, you know, and every team, you know, every team fails and everyone in a team fails and nothing ever goes entirely to plan, but you're always talking about it, working together and talking about the goal.
Yeah.
And so I think our discipleship would benefit if we remind each other that the point of our discipleship is not just to get cozy with Jesus, but is to actually see the kingdom come. That's what we're on about. So we need to know the power and the authority of in Jesus' name. We need to know the forgiveness and the freedom and the peace that comes in his name. In order that we can share that.
So do you think then like evangelism is a product of discipleship in that if I am, you know, a good disciple and I'm actively following after Jesus, it's kind of like an overflow effect of I have something to talk about.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think it's the fruit of it. Yeah. It's the fruit of it, right? Because that's the whole point of Jesus inviting you to follow him, right? It wasn't, again, just so you could experience forgiveness and get to heaven one day. No. That's a nice kind of side effect, a benefit.
It's a bonus.
It's a bonus. But like the whole point is, hey, join the team. Let's get after the restoration of all things. So yeah, I think that it does become a natural outcome. And as we reflected earlier, if my relationship with Jesus is vibrant and present tense, then that's helpful when people are asking what's going on in my life. Eventually, even if it's a little bit strange, I'm going to talk about what I'm learning. You know, I'm really growing in what it means to trust. Trust who? Well, you probably wouldn't understand because you're not a believer, but trust in Jesus. Like, I really believe that that's,
see where that takes you.
Who knows where you go, so I think that's really valuable.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, let's move on to question two.
So in Mark chapter 1, you talk a lot about, you know, Jesus calling the disciples to drop their nets and just follow him, and they have no idea who he is. They have no qualifications, no education. They're just simple fishermen. And Jesus even calls them to evangelize and to do his mission before they understand who he is, really. And so how do we let go of the idea that we need to grow in Jesus before we can follow him?
Yeah. I think we probably need Jesus to show up again and start sending us out to tasks.
I've been asking. You know? Trust me, Lord knows. I've been asking.
You know, because I mean, there are some tensions in it, right? Like there are places and spaces where we acknowledge that experience and knowledge and skillfulness and growth and maturity are really helpful, you know, in leadership or whatever it might be. And so we do have that tension to hold to. Mm. You know, we believe that the Spirit empowers and can enable us beyond our weaknesses and beyond our strengths and beyond our maturity and our immaturity. So like we have to hold that intention. And I think some of it, Jess, is probably probably speaking to myself, really, as those in leadership, we need to be encouraging people to take steps of faith as soon as they've got some, right? Step to the point of your faith. So if you've just begun to follow Jesus, and you're still not entirely certain what you believe, but you believe enough about Jesus to kind of go, he's worth following. Well, tell your friends about that. Mm. You don't try to convince them of the Trinity. don't try to explain the book of Revelation. Like, just don't go there.
Talk about predestination.
But just tell them where you're up to. Yeah. Like, the present tense. What do you know right now? Well, I know that Jesus is really intriguing, and there's something in my spirit that's just drawing me towards exploring him more. Okay. If that's what you believe, that if that's as far as you've got, do that. And I think we have to, as leaders, I think we need to enable people to talk about where they're up to a little bit more quickly. And then I don't know out of that. You know, I think that, you know, the problem with, I mean, I experience this a bit, but you know, like our Sunday services, whether they're online or face to face, or there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors to it, right? In the sense that, you know, like people say to me, "Oh, you know, great preacher," and I'm like, "I've been doing it for 25 years. I teach it. I've done advanced study in it. If I weren't any good, surely someone would be a little bit worried by now." Like, you know what I'm saying? And so, you know, and it looks like it's just something you get up and do, but there's a lot of work that goes into those things. Mm. And I don't think anyone would be surprised for me to say, you know, like it's a lot of work that goes into that, but there's still, I think it kind of sets the bar high for people of kind of going, "Oh yeah, I don't know the Bible like that." It's like, well, like, do you have lots of commentaries and do you read them? Like, probably not.
Yeah.
Just like I know absolutely nothing about your field, right? Like, I got no idea. You make it look effortless. How do you do that? You're like, what do you mean effortless? You know, I studied, I read, I do development, like all that kind of stuff. And so I think we need to kind of take some of that out a little bit of Christianity and probably just get people involved earlier. And that's kind of tricky. You know, we talk about safe church policy stuff now. You know, there's certain things, codes of conduct about faith and whatnot that, you know, we have to kind of invite people into to serve. But I think finding those ways for people to express what they know about Jesus without any of that sense of judgment and whatnot. I don't know what you guys think.
I mean, as you're talking, I'm brought back to that discipleship piece and how we need to start talking about how that needs to be more of an external reflection.
A public reflection.
Yes. I think we do, there is, to use your words, like smoke and mirrors. I think a lot of people can kind of come into this space and look around and just be like, man, everyone has got it together. And I'm over here, sinful little dude that I am, like completely broken with all of my vices. I have days where I doubt. I have days where I stumble. I have days where I want to throw in the towel, but everyone else just looks so holy, so righteous. And I mean, that was my experience when I first came to church. I was just like, you know, I looked around at, I was 19. I looked around at all the other 19-year-olds and I'm like, how do they have this faith? But if we're talking about in real, genuine, authentic and normal and natural ways. If we're talking about, yeah, like I am trying to figure out predestination, who has wrapped their head around that bad boy these days? Like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Like I'm trying to figure out how to trust. I'm trying to figure out how to hear from Jesus, which is our next question. Mm. But like we don't do that. We come in and don't get me wrong, I love our Sunday services and I love coming together in this way, but we come in and we sing praise and we sit down and we receive, you know, amazing teaching, present company included.
Thanks, Matt.
Yep. Of course, Jessica Baker. We don't talk about the hard stuff. And I think if we did that more, then maybe we'd see a decrease in that mentality that you need to get to a certain point before you can do X, Y, and Z. Mm.
And I think you're kind of following on. I think we need to probably start talking about discipleship as starting earlier.
Yeah.
As well. Because I think sometimes we assume discipleship starts once I've put my faith in Jesus. And I think what we're saying is that it starts as soon as you start to follow him.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, you might not believe everything about him yet. Mm. That's all right. You might not have explored enough to be able to make a judgment on that. You might not be willing to change your life yet. Yeah. Okay, well, follow Jesus. You know, we keep talking about the crisis point that will come. The more you learn about Jesus, the more the implications become clear of what it means to follow him, the more the question of who he is comes to the fore. You're going to have to make a decision eventually, but the disciples don't need to make that decision right away, and I think that's an excellent model. And so I think if we start talking about discipleship earlier, I think that's really valuable.
Yeah.
You know, for people to kind of go, oh, okay. And to kind of champion the disciples a bit more. Mm. You know, yeah, okay, they built the church. That's fairly impressive. But
I'll pay that.
You look at them in the Gospels and they ask stupid questions out loud. Mm. Right? And they say stupid stuff out loud. And Jesus, generally speaking, is really gracious. Mm. You know, there's a few times when you can just you can hear him rolling his eyes a few times. You're like, really? Are you like? I think it's in Mark's gospel. Are you still so dull?
We literally just talked about this, guys. Like, eyes up.
Yeah. Like when he says, "Beware the yeast of the Pharisees," and they go, "Oh, he's because we didn't bring any bread," and you can just hear Jesus's eyes roll. He's like, "This is not about bread. It's a metaphor," you know. But anyway, you know, I think that there's value in that, and championing the questions. I think to some degree, like the big three, I think is a bit of a way to model that, to kind of go, yeah, ask your questions. You know, like I don't think we've ever responded with a, okay, that's a dumb question, and no one who actually calls himself a Christian would ask that. Like,
heavy days.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that's sometimes the approach. And we don't have any requirements. You don't have to answer three Bible questions to be able to submit a question on Slido. So I think that that's actually a kind of a step in the right direction, if I can, you know, blow our own horn for a moment. You know, like,
we're crushing.
Because it's a step in the right direction, right? To be able to acknowledge, all right, we don't have all the answers, and kind of move on from there.
Yeah. Mm. And again, to bring it back to evangelism, which is what this whole series is about, if we're better at doing that with each other and sharing that with each other, how much better are we going to be about sitting in the difficulty and the tension that others who don't know Jesus are probably already in? Like, I don't have the answers. I don't know where I fit. I don't know what I think. I'm leaning in. Like, I'm interested by Jesus. Yeah. He seems like an interesting guy. Like, we're going to be far more comfortable to sit in that space with them and kind of go, well, let's talk about that. Yeah. Like,
and I think we have to be careful of our assumptions of other people, right? You know, I think sometimes we assume that everyone kind of knows the stories or knows the expected behavior or whatever it might be. And that ends up increasing people's anxiety about stuff, right? You know, I teach at a Bible college. I should probably know a lot about the Bible. Like, you'd like to think that's the case. But I just have to be careful that I'm not assuming that everyone knows and understands. Mm. I still remember, this is years ago, just before I was to get up to preach, I can't remember who it was, one of the staff leaned over and kind of said, oh, I see that person in the second row or whatever. I was like, yeah, first time at church, like no background at all. Like, it was this kind of a story. Yeah. And so I get up and, you know, that little voice inside your head that's kind of editing as you go.
Yeah.
And a couple of times, like it was, I think it turned out to be a longer sermon because I kept kind of stopping and going, nope, nobody knows that story. So, you know, like, how do I explain this story to someone who's, never heard the Bible story without kind of slowing down and starting from Genesis 1. You know, like, and it was a really interesting exercise just to be aware of how profound my assumptions were that people just kind of know the story of David. Mm. That when I say David, people are like, oh, David, yeah, of course.
That guy.
You know, but even people who've been in church for a long time probably don't really know the story of David. Mm. They know the highlights package
right,
and the lowlights package, but they probably don't know, you know. So anyway, so I think assumptions would be another place to start.
Yeah, I think so.
I think something that helps take away the kind of fear of stepping out in evangelism is knowing that you're probably not going to come up against the atheist equivalent of Mark Rader, who knows everything there is to know about how to smash the Bible down. Like, we don't need to know everything in order to talk to people about God.
Mm.
And I think this is something that doctors are taught really well is, you know, in their practice, if they've got all these symptoms for a patient, they're able to come up to them and say, actually, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Mm.
And so to be able to say that as a Christian, if someone asks me about a topic, actually, I'm working that out. I don't quite know yet. We've got to kind of be comfortable with that.
Yeah. And you know, if I can just follow on from that, Jess, to also, you know, if it's in relationships, to be able to kind of gently push back on some of the questions, right? You know, so because I think sometimes people outside of faith think that their question is enough to kind of call all of Christianity into question.
Mm.
It's like, you know what? You're not the first person to ask the question of suffering.
Yeah.
2,000 years and more of believers in God have been asking questions about evil and suffering, and they've still found a place of faith. Mm. So, like, your question's not going to cause it to crumble.
Yeah.
So I don't have an answer for it, but nobody really has an answer for it. And if you need an answer to the unsolvable question, how do you make any decisions? You know, like, because in relationship you can have that kind of conversation and you know, be gentle, and but it's just kind of like, oh, really, do you think that's— is that it? Like, is that, do you need the answer to that question?
Mm.
Okay. I'll keep praying for you. You know, like, you know, it's a tricky space. Yeah.
Yeah. Far out. All right. Well, let's move on to question 3. So Rader, just wrapping up in our third and final question, something that you spoke about in your message was, you know, We need to be asking ourselves the question, you know, what is Jesus saying to you, as a way of kind of discerning where we're growing and how our relationship with Jesus is going. And if Jesus hasn't said anything to you, or maybe a better way of saying it is, if you haven't heard from Jesus recently, like, maybe your relationship with him isn't in the present tense, which brought up a question. And as Jess and I were talking about before, it's a question that comes up a lot, is how do we discern that what we're hearing is from Jesus? And, you know, in a nutshell, that's question 3 for today's big 3. How do we go about discerning what Jesus might be saying to us?
Mm, yeah. And it's a good question to follow on from what I talked about briefly in my message. So I referred to the 5 P's, the 5 catalysts that Andy Stanley at North Point Church in Atlanta, I think it is, use, the catalysts of private disciplines, personal service, practical teaching, pivotal circumstances, and providential relationships, catalysts to hear from Jesus. And I think, you know, if the listeners haven't heard it, you go back over or just look it up on the internet, like Andy Stanley's 5 P's, and you'll find it. And I think they make sense for us, right? So we, you know, you read the Bible, you pray, you've got relationships, life groups and whatnot that you're working through, you're in a ministry area, whatever it is. And that makes sense as catalysts for our faith. But the question, I think, is the next step beyond, which is how do you discern?
Yeah.
Right? What's the discernment process? And I think that's a really good question. Because I think, you know, once we start listening for the voice of Jesus, once we start listening to the voice of the Holy Spirit, we'll hear things. The question is, how do you discern not necessarily what's true, because then it kind of raises the stakes a little bit much, you know, to kind of go, oh, if I get this wrong, I'm false, right? Or what's orthodox? Oh, it's heresy if it's not right. But, you know, like that idea of, like, is this actually what Jesus is saying?
Mm.
You know, and I think that, I guess, almost as a principle, as kind of background, I'd probably say, we probably need to kind of give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. You know, like, I know that this is going to sound like a bit of a digression, but hopefully it'll only be a tangent and come back to the point. But it'll be the other way around. It doesn't matter. I hear like young preachers, then they say, oh, I'm afraid of preaching heresy.
Story of my life.
Yeah. Well, and one of my kind of pushbacks is, particularly those who are in Bible college, I'm like, you're in Bible college. So now you should know a heresy, shouldn't you? Like, you should probably be able to pick one after doing church history and New Testament and a theology subject or two. Like, apparently
you would,
not.
You would think. We were talking just before about how I'm the worst mature age student ever because I don't try hard and I'm not engaged.
These are inside thoughts.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yes, I'm an excellent student and I'm learning lots about theology.
But I think we need to kind of worry a bit less about getting it wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, part of the discernment process then I think becomes, you know, you think about, you know, I know, Jess, you're no longer on social media. Bravo.
Loving it.
but, you know, I think one of the questions that social media has raised for us is what is true, right? Like what's authentic might be a better way to talk about it. You know, what's authentic? And there's some enormous issues being raised by social media around that space, whether it be misinformation or all of the... the filters and, you know, the echo chambers that we end up in and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that there's probably some handy parallels with making, like, discerning what Jesus might be saying to us, right? I think that, you know, you want to make sure that you're listening to other voices, right? Not just people who are going to automatically agree with you. I think that's helpful. I think that's where, you know, being in a life group is a useful thing, you know, getting some other voices in your life a little bit to kind of bounce stuff off of. I think we also want to, be comparing what we sense Jesus might be saying and compare it with what we find in Scripture.
Yeah.
But I think one of the more helpful things is to recognize that often what Jesus is going to call us to do is, what's the best way? It's almost like they're micro actions. Right, I think sometimes we assume that when Jesus calls us to do something, like it's going to be massive. Quit your job and go to Bible college. Right? Take your whole family and start ministering in a slum someplace. And so we're like, oh, got to get that one right. Don't want to be out of the will of God. And yet most of the stuff, I think, is going to be micro actions. Mm. You know, you're praying and you say, you know, Lord, who do you want me to care for? Mm. And a name drops into your head and you think, oh, is that you, Lord? Mm. Is that just me? Because I haven't seen Matt for a long time. Is Jesus going to be disappointed if I call someone and just touch base and say, hey, how you doing? I was praying this morning, just kind of thought of you and thought I'd touch base and let you know, took a time to pray for you and how you going?
Yeah.
Like, is Jesus up in heaven rolling his eyes, kind of face palming, going, oh, I didn't say Matt, you know?
But he did, Radar. He did say Matt.
Yeah. Just love you know me. What I'm saying? Like, and so sometimes we put a little bit too much pressure on those decisions. Mm. You know, like if we feel that God is calling us to do something kind for someone, that sounds kingdom to me.
Yeah.
Just go for it. I remember when I was much younger, I was a camp counselor or whatever it might be. And we were talking about how do you discern the will of God? And I still remember something that she said to me. She said, you know, God's ability to speak is infinitely greater than our ability to hear. Mm. In other words, if God wants us to hear something, we will hear it, right? Like, it's not as if Jesus is trying to communicate and there's something in the way and you can't quite get through to us. No. If Jesus is something big, he's going to make sure it's pretty clear for us. And, you know, we still may need to go through the hard process of making a big decision.
Yeah.
So kind of go for it. If it looks kingdom, right? It's that whole, you know, if it looks like a duck, sounds like a duck, swims like a duck, it's probably a duck. You know, like if it sounds kingdom, if it feels kingdom, if its outcomes are kingdom, it's probably kingdom. Like, just go for it.
Yeah.
If being called to be kind or generous or merciful or compassionate or patient or loving or like forgiving, if those things kind of come to mind, I don't know, that sounds like it's kingdom. And I can't imagine God kind of going, well, why are people running around being generous to the wrong people? Mm. You know, I didn't want you to forgive them. I wanted to forgive them. You know, like, so I think we need to kind of listen for smaller things rather than, you know, we should be on the lookout for the big things that Jesus might be calling us to. But I think we need to consider smaller things, which are often easier easier and harder to discern, but because the consequences aren't as grand, you know, like if I, you know, if I call you to encourage you and you know, kind of miss the opportunity to call Jess, you know, like I can probably call her tomorrow, you know, like, you know, or
but
whatever
will
it might
you,
be. But will I? That's right. That's right. Only if Jesus tells me to. So, you know, so like, I think that helps us a little bit discern that, like it kind of takes the pressure off. Cause when you talk about discerning big things, discernment's really important.
Yeah.
But those micro actions, let's kind of go with it a little bit.
And what I love about that is you're right. Like the consequences aren't huge to kind of step out in faith and kind of do that small thing, that, you know, encouraging message or that phone call or whatever it is, whether it's for someone else or even something within your own personal journey, like just taking that time to be prayerful, to worship, whatever it might be. Consequence isn't huge. And I also find that in those moments where I do kind of lean into it, the more I lean in, the more I feel an affirmation whether or not it is of God.
Yeah.
It's that whole like trial and error, for lack of a better term, less error, but more trial of like, let me just lean in, let me push into this, let me test this out. And then Jesus does continue to talk. It's not like he leaves one message and if you miss it, like that's it. You can't, you know, it's not as if you can't like listen back. You do get to keep, like he continues to speak. He continues to direct. He continues to guide. And so when you do lean into that, the consequence is small, as you say, but the opportunity to feel affirmation is bigger. And then the more you get that, the more you experience that, I think the more in tune you then get to, okay, when Jesus is talking to me, which is quite, can be quite a unique experience, you know, the way he talks to me might be different to the way he talks to you, the way he talks to Jess. But you get it, you get an ear for it, your ear, ear becomes tuned to it, and then you build that confidence so that, you know, as it comes more and more, you're able to kind of go, oh no, this is consistent with how how God talks to
you. And you don't have to tell people that God spoke to me and this is what I'm doing about it. Like, you know, I think you can keep that to yourself a bit and just kind of, I felt I should call Jess, so I called her up, and I'm not going to say God told me. I'm just going to call her up. And yet I hear it, like anecdote after anecdote of people who have done that, like that sense of, oh, I should just give her a call. I haven't thought about Jess in weeks and she just popped into my head. And so I contacted her and boom, Jess is like, oh man, I can't believe, you know, like I can't believe you contacted me now. It just had this happen in my life. And you just kind of go, oh, there's the confirmation of what's going on. And I think God can then do, you know, disproportionate good. You know, a small phone call can be an enormous stepping stone for someone in our life who may be outside of faith, for instance. So.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Raider, thanks so much for joining us this week's Big Three.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm wrapping my head around it all. I think what this has demonstrated for me is probably something that we've all kind of felt but maybe never necessarily articulated. Like evangelism just, it feels huge. And even, you know, through Plan A, we've been able to break it up into these five bite-sized pieces, it still feels huge. And so I'm so glad that we're able to take these opportunities to sit down and just unpack it and talk it out, because I think we do need to be doing that. And that seems to be the reoccurring theme today, is we just need to pull this out of it being a private thing and it more being a public thing and sharing those
small public steps of kingdom behavior is evangelism / discipleship.
There you go. Hashtag. Well, thank you for joining us and we'll catch
Pleasure.
You soon.
Yeah, we'll see you guys.
Jessica Baker, my friend. Huge things in this. And I felt like, you know, the message was about growing in your relationship with Jesus, but I felt like we actually were unpacking things, not bigger, not because things are bigger than our relationship with Jesus, but like big ideas and big implications on our life. What was your take home?
I think making it a little bit clearer that like evangelism is kind of a flow on effect of discipleship.
Yeah.
That's something I've been really frustrated about, is like I don't want to just stop it like, oh, like I'm going to youth group tonight and my work friends are like, okay, cool. Like I'm sick of just dropping little hints here and there. Like I want to actually talk about like big meaty things.
Yeah.
And so like that kind of idea of actually I probably need to focus a bit more on discipleship with myself, but also within a life group setting and things like that to help with my evangelism.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you?
I think, yeah, like I'm in the same space of, I think that public disclosure is the wrong word. It's got a bad tone to it. But, you know, that vulnerability, it does start, I think, obviously with our relationship with Jesus, and then by extension, those who also have a relationship with Jesus and the community that we build. I know church looks different for us at the moment, but there are, you know, you and I are both a part of different life groups, and we have those available to us. Mm. You know, we serve together in a team, and we have people around us in that space where we do get to just have those opportunities to have real honest conversations about where we're at with faith. Mm. And I've realized that I can be a little bit, I can keep my cards close to my chest a little bit in that space. But if, again, I'm just reminded that if I'm not comfortable to share with close friends who are on the same journey as me, if I'm not willing to share with them where I'm at, how do I expect that when an opportunity arises to speak to someone who doesn't know Jesus, that I'm actually going to feel any more confident to kind of say, well, this is what I know, this is what I've experienced. So I think, I'm reminded actually of some really good friends. I'll keep this short, but they're just, they're people who, the way that they talk, it just so effortlessly, there we go, their language just effortlessly, I'm not saying that right, effortlessly integrates their faith into life.
Yeah.
You know, they'll just be talking about something so mundane, and yet God is just speckled throughout how they talk about it. And I always loved being around them because I was like, man, this is real faith lived out.
Yeah.
And yet, like, so why aren't I doing that more, I guess is my take home. So it's a good, because I think that does help us then grow in our own personal relationship with God, which then, as we'll see in, I think, weeks to come, put us in a better position to share that relationship with others.
There is something I just want to say on the kind of sharing with people in your life group and things about how you're going with faith. It's besides the point, but I know I've been kind of trapped in the past of, I'm a youth leader. I'm quite like, I'm very vocal at church. You wouldn't believe it. I'm very in your face about Christianity. And so I kind of got to a point where I was a little bit trapped in that I was really struggling with my faith, but I felt like I couldn't share with anyone how I was going, because that would give up like, well, why are you a youth leader if you're really struggling with your faith? And so you just kind of get more and more like suffocated by that. And so I guess that's the benefit of having a life group where you trust people, is that you can say, look, I know I look like a really good Christian, but actually I'm really struggling. Could I have some help? And so I just kind of wanted to put that out there.
Just a little free plug.
Yeah, as in that's okay.
Yeah.
Like we all get into places where we're really struggling with our faith and
Yeah. So just an invitation to be vulnerable, I guess.
If that's you, share it with someone. Join. Share it with me because I feel ya. I feel
ya. Sister, I feel ya. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're at one of our services this Sunday at gbconline.org.au, and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.